It is Wednesday, July 17th, and you're listening to Good Morning Atlanta, sponsored by World Trade Center Atlanta on Business Radio X, a proud 2013 member of Central Atlanta Progress. Learn more about Central Atlanta Progress at atlantadowntown.com. I'm Dana Barrett, and we have a great show lined up for you today, as always. This morning in the studio, we're joined by GMA regular, the membership manager of Central Atlanta Progress, Dan Williams. Hello, sir.
Good morning.
And, of course, our special guest today is Zoo Atlanta president and CEO Raymond King. So, welcome to the show, both of you guys.
Thank you. It's great to be here. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, we got a lot going on at the zoo. We were talking before we went on the air, so I'm not going to waste too much time on my usual nonsense. But we got to start with the usual nonsense because that's how we roll here at Good Morning Atlanta. So I was looking through the headlines, and the first thing I wanted to talk about is I saw a headline about MARTA, and we always like to talk about transportation on this show. And it was just one about MARTA sort of requesting from designers and developers and whatever to get some ideas on developing the area around the King Memorial Station.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought that was really interesting because, you know, having lived in other cities with public transit, usually the public transit either kind of comes in where there's already stuff,
right,
or automatically stuff, and stuff being retail, apartments, restaurants, whatever, starts to grow around the stations. But in some of the cases around Atlanta, more than just the King Station, but several of them, that hasn't really happened. These stations have been there for years, and there's just a lot of sort of empty space around them.
Right.
And so that's what's happening here. And so instead of the city automatically going to MARTA stops saying, this is where we want to develop, MARTA's going out to the city saying, okay, come develop here.
Right.
So that's kind of an interesting turnaround, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, this has been, you know, an expectation of MARTA, frankly, since it was developed. And there's been a lot of studies done on it, on the potential around there. And you're right, it just naturally hasn't happened the way I think anybody would want it to. There's a huge opportunity. There have been some good proven successes.
Sure. Yeah, in that area, so King Memorial is actually, you know, sort of, I guess you would say it's Old Fourth Ward, kind of getting into the, kind of the boundary of Old Fourth Ward in downtown. And right in that area, you have just a block away the streetcar.
Yeah.
And where the streetcar will come in. So, you know, you really have kind of a double whammy there of opportunity as it relates to transit and transit options. So it naturally makes sense to focus on that area. It's underdeveloped. You know, the Edgewood, as we've talked on the show before, you know, the Auburn Avenue, Edgewood area, just seeing incredible change right now. So to move that way towards King Memorial Station makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I always find it really interesting because, you know, I lived in D.C. for a while when I was younger, and I remember looking for apartments, and I would specifically sort of look for the metro station and then sort of fan out, like, how far do I want to walk to get to the metro station, or do I really want to ride the bus or whatever? And so there is so much opportunity, and I think it'll be really interesting, especially in some areas like that, where there is space for not just, like, a thing. There's space for, like, apartments and restaurants and mixed use and all kinds of space available. So do you think will there be deals made to kind of make this happen?
I don't know. Raymond is the former banker. He might have a better insight on that. I mean, I know that there's certainly, I mean, all that is part of the area that we're doing economic development planning work associated with the streetcar.
Yeah.
And so it's an area of you know, importance to us, but you know, in terms of deals.
Well, the good news is, I mean, the environment's certainly much better. I mean, you could have, you know, talked about this 3 years ago and it just would have not gone anywhere. The financing market wasn't there.
Right.
But the banks have certainly, you know, opened up their risk appetite again and are doing deals and are active in the real estate market. I think one of the challenges with these situations is that often it takes some high density to make the economics work. And so think about Piedmont in Buckhead, where they got the Bell South, you know, many headquarters there. You put a lot of density there, a lot of people. It made it, you know, work. When you've got more of a residential area, I think the economics are just more difficult for a developer to make work.
Yeah. It's really interesting, too. I mean, we've talked several times on the show about the apartment development versus condo development and how that's changed so dramatically over the last number of years. I mean, for a while here in Atlanta, all you saw was condo buildings going up. Yeah. And now all you see is apartment buildings going up.
Sure.
Yeah, we will quickly be overly saturated in apartments. I mean, you're right. It is amazing how quickly they're coming out of the ground.
Right. I mean, the cool thing is that the cranes are moving and building is happening, and sort of that's all good signal. But at the same time, you know, people are going to start having a lot to choose from.
Right. Well, you mentioned that right there at the King Memorial Station, you have the Pencil Factory Lofts and all the retail associated with that.
Right.
That location actually, the developer originally wanted that to be condos, and it was developed as a condo, as a big condo development, and that in the course of the market, all the turmoil in the market, they quickly decided, you know, this needs to be apartments, and it's been very successful, as you know, Georgia State, young professionals, other folks that work and live downtown, so. You know, I think there's room for in that particular area, you know,
you've now got developers looking at, you know, flipping back now, from, you know, apartments to condos.
Yeah.
So the cycle has turned.
If you are looking for a condo, there's a lot less to choose from.
Yeah.
It's
the inventory is huge. I mean, it's very low now. It's amazing how quickly it came.
But in downtown, we still, I mean, I think there's still citywide. I think you're right. I mean, oversaturation is inevitable, but in downtown and the area, Old Fourth Ward close to downtown, Castleberry, the other areas. I mean, I think there's just incredible pent up demand for even still apartments. I mean,
I would agree.
We're gonna need a lot more as downtown to continue to develop, as the Auburn Avenue area, hopefully South Downtown, the changes we'll see. We're going to see a lot more people being interested in living downtown.
All you have to do is go out and walk on the Beltline Saturday morning, and you will see how people are flocking to it.
Yeah.
So, you know, that will draw the demand, if nothing else.
Yeah, it's so interesting because I've been in Atlanta now for some ungodly number of years, like 20-something, 3 or 4, I don't know. I lost count, 25 maybe. And it's changed so dramatically since I moved here. But the thing that's so interesting to me is that I feel like we're in the midst of another really big change. I mean, one of the things that was always sort of sad to me about Atlanta, I know we've talked about this, Dan, is that it really wasn't an in-town city. You know, there's a lot of people spread out in the burbs because it's so affordable to buy, you know, I watch all these HGTV shows and people are buying, you know, in other cities, they're spending 3 times what we spend to get a beautiful property here, you know. But now it's sort of changing and people are more interested in living in the city. And I feel like every week there's some new attraction and there's some new reason to be in the city,
sure,
which is really cool. So I don't really know if I want to be here in another 23 or 4 or 5 years. But if I am, I can only imagine how different it's going to be even in 5 years from now.
Yeah.
With the streetcar coming in, with all the changes.
Right.
And so that's a perfect segue for me to talk about. And because you're here, you know, from the zoo too, just to talk about Atlanta attractions, I cannot not talk about the fact that the Ferris wheel opened yesterday.
Yeah.
So did you go? Have you gone on it?
I haven't ridden it. We were there for the ribbon cutting yesterday, and it was a zoo.
Nicely done.
It was, a lot of people, a lot of really excited people. It was a little hot and sticky, so I didn't stick around for too long, but got some pictures with the mayor and Kwanzaa Hall and all these folks. You know, city council showed up to, you know,
kick it off.
Yeah, give it the, you know. It was a fun day. People are really excited. Everybody, I mean, people that don't pay attention to downtown stuff, you know, nearly at the level that we do, everybody's excited and talking about it. So,
well, I haven't been down there to see it up yet. Yeah. I've seen the pictures, but what do you think about, you know, how it looks there? Does it look weird? Is it out of place?
I love it. Cool? I love the location. It's right behind the Tabernacle. That parking lot didn't really have a whole lot of space for parking to begin with, so it's not like it's an essential asset to the Tabernacle.
Sure.
There's plenty of other, like we always tell people, despite a perception you may have, there's plenty of parking in downtown. So if you're coming to the Tabernacle, you're not going to have a hard time finding somewhere to park. And by the way, it's not far from a couple MARTA stations as well. So, I love that, before people come in before concerts, can take a ride, all the things that are going on at Centennial Park. It's just right across the street. It just really, it seems to just fit in, you know, like a, you know, I hope it stays forever, but it may not.
And that's, so. We've been talking about that too. Right now, yeah. It sort of doesn't have an end date, right?
They give us the term semi-permanent. So that was a new one on me. But
it sounds like a guy that can't quite commit to the relationship. Yeah. Let's get engaged to be engaged.
Can you be my semi-permanent girlfriend?
That's right. Like you a lot.
Maybe they're just being really honest because there's nothing permanent anymore.
Right.
So.
Right.
Well, that's true.
Right.
Too.
And they've been, and they've been in several other cities with this particular Ferris wheel, and they were in Pensacola last. All we can hope is that we bring them so many people and so many customers and
exactly right.
repeat customers, and in terms of tourism year round, as we've talked about before, obviously we have an incredible tourism and convention industry here. Most the bulk of that happening in downtown. So, year round, I think we have an advantage over somewhere like Pensacola where, they're going to have, two or three months of spotty tourism, winter's dead. Here you got people in the winter, coming for conventions just as much as you do in the summer.
Yeah, and so. Yesterday they said they're, hoping to get 300,000 visitors. When you think about the visitorship at the aquarium, small spillover will get you 300,000. So, I don't think they're, dreaming unrealistically. And if that's all it takes for them to be, pleased economically, it ought to be around for a while.
Yeah. Well, we're going to tie all this back to the zoo in a minute, too. But and just in terms of, the numbers that you guys like to see and all of that. But I do want to also point out for people that are sort of getting all of their Ferris wheel updates from our show, that it is still a pretty affordable attraction too. $13.50 for adults, $8 or $8.50 I guess for kids. Discounts for seniors, military, and groups. So
VIP. They've got a VIP car, I think.
Oh, I want to go on that one.
$50 right. VIP car. Yeah.
What do you get?
Has leather seating, television. Although I'm not sure why you
want
to.
Why'd
you want a television?
Is the ride longer for the VIP, or is it the same ride?
I don't know about that.
Okay. Yeah, I haven't dug into all those specifics as well. I'm due to have lunch with the marketing folks with Skyview and we'll figure all that out. CAPAtlantadowntown.com. We will be talking about Skyview a lot.
Yeah, well, just let's talk get about them the on the show, and, Dan.
We'll bring them on. Because
I've been obsessed, as you know, with this story since I first heard about it.
Well, mayor in his remarks yesterday, and Raymond, you may know more about this, but he says this has been in the works for 3 years. So. Nothing happens that
overnight.
Overnight.
Feels like
especially
it
to when us. when you're luring something away from another city or whatever. So,
Had I only known, I could have been obsessed with it for 3 years instead of just
so
6 months.
Some other city out there is beginning the process of luring them away from Atlanta. We just probably have to.
we can fight them off.
Right, we have to fight them off.
We
now.
Can do it. We're much cooler. And speaking of development, this is like the worst segue ever. But I have, we are noticing cranes sort of moving all around town and more apartments, more construction in general. And I happen to live near. I've moved a couple of times since the show began, but I actually now live near Buckhead, Brookhaven area. And if you drive past Lenox Mall, you can't miss that they're doing a big renovation as well. And I just happened to catch a story that mentioned a couple of new restaurants coming in there, one called True Food Kitchen and one called Zen Burger, which is like two of my favorite thing, wine and burgers together.
Can't go wrong.
So anyway, I don't know exactly opening dates for those, but once again, they're trying to make the front of Lenox. I feel like they've done this multiple times, and it always sort of ultimately looks the same to me.
Right.
But I think they're trying to make it a little more friendly looking from the outside. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if they accomplish that. And somehow I think – and we've had Buckhead people on this show too talking about development in Buckhead and what they're trying to do there. And it always interests me because it was – originally Buckhead was like a far-out suburb.
Sure.
And so Lenox Mall was like the mall out in the burbs in a way,
right.
Even though it's inside the perimeter. And and so it's all designed so, for driving. It's not designed as a walking part of our city.
And I still can't figure it out.
And the mall is also huge. So if you go in one door, forget it. You better make sure you drop some breadcrumbs so you can find your way back out.
Yeah.
But it's unfortunate because it has become, there's a lot of offices around there. There's a lot of people, talking about sort of density. There's a lot of density there.
And they've made it much more walkable. Buckhead is doing the same thing that downtown's doing in terms of the streetscapes. right. To make it much more friendly at the retail level. And you do see more people out walking sidewalks than you did. But
you
yes,
do.
It's still heavily auto-dependent.
Yeah, it feels like because the streets are so wide there, it just feels like you should be in your car and not on your feet, which is unfortunate. And I hope they continue to improve that and, you know, more maybe sky bridges across and stuff like that. Because crossing the street, you feel like you're taking your life into your hands a little bit. You know, just going, if you just wanted to do the mall thing and, like, let's say you came into town and stayed at the Ritz and wanted to just do Phipps and Lenox.
Right.
It's a little scary walking across all there. So anyway, all right, let's move to a couple of national-ish stories before we move to back to the zoo. This one just interested me because one of the things that always sort of intrigued me about this new sort of global world that we live in is, and the internet is sort of business names. Now, obviously, you don't have to worry about that with the zoo or Central Atlanta Progress, really, because how many Atlanta downtowns are there? But, you know, when a small company is starting out and they're looking for a new name now, you can spend days, weeks, months just brainstorming names and trying to see if the domain name exists and where this business exists in some little small town in Missouri. That it never mattered before, right? Who cared if there was like a Judge's grocery store? Because who cares? But now if there's one in Missouri, you better be careful because
You'll get sued
or they have the domain name or, you know, all your web traffic's going to go to them or whatever. Well, I was reading this story that kind of intrigued me because the Cracker Barrel restaurant, which I've never been a huge fan of for a variety of reasons, which we won't get into here. But anyway, the Cracker Barrel restaurants decided that they wanted to sell food in the grocery store, like a lot of the restaurants are doing. Panera is doing it now, and California Pizza Kitchen does it, and a lot of the big chains do that. So Cracker Barrel said, okay, we want to sell like ham and some other things in the grocery store. Well, Kraft said, no. We have Cracker Barrel cheese that we've had on the grocery shelves forever, and you are going to be infringing on our brand and confusing our consumers if you come into the grocery store. So Kraft has sued. And for the moment, a judge is upholding, they're on Kraft's side right now. So Cracker Barrel restaurants are not allowed to put their food in the grocery stores right now. But it's just sort of an interesting story to me because it's the kind of thing that you never had to think about. I mean, 25, 30 years ago, 40, 50, whenever Cracker Barrel restaurants started, and certainly whenever Kraft had Cracker Barrel cheese, nobody was thinking about that. And here we are in 2013, and, you know, we're fighting over that name.
Yeah, I don't know. My lawyer friends tell me that IP, intellectual property law, is you know, like the hottest place to be.
It is, absolutely.
It's so interesting just because I also think about, you know, companies. I don't know why this subject has bubbled up for me lately, but it, you know, you think about companies that pick names that really don't mean anything, or they mean something in another language and they just pick that word because they like the sound of it or whatever. And then you think about companies like Radio Shack, who picked their name again in like what, 1960 something, or maybe early 70s or something, when radios were cool and shacks might have even been cool. And no offense to our listeners, but radios aren't that cool anymore, and neither are shacks. And now they're kind of stuck with that name, you know?
Right.
And so, you know?
Yeah, I noticed Mellow Yellow is launching an ad campaign recently where they're trying to, stave off the idea that their product is mellow because, you know, now drinks need to be
hyper
and extreme and, you know,
yeah, it's all about the lifestyle.
Keep
it's
you up all night, you know, so mellow, like, you know, I don't drink that to be mellow, you know, they don't want you to.
Right. It's so funny. It's like you have to be so careful when you're choosing these names about not only what they mean right now, but what are they going to mean if your brand actually survives and lasts 20 or 30 years? Certainly Mellow Yellow in the 70s was like the coolest thing around.
Right.
You know, and everybody was drinking Mellow Yellow and hanging out at the Radio Shack, you know. Now, not so much. So now we want to get hyped up on 5-Hour Energy and, you know, go to the, you know, Tech Village, not the Radio Shack. So anyway, it's just kind of interesting. I just sort of look at all that stuff because I've started several different companies over the course of my career. And names, I've spent a lot of time brainstorming names and then sort of thinking to myself, this is really stupid. I should just call it like Dana's Place and be done with it because who cares? You know, like, it doesn't matter as long as people come and spend money. Right. All right. And speaking of brand names and things like that, I like to do lists on this show, and this is not a real list, but I happened to notice this article about the top 10 favorite cars for car thieves.
Saw it as well. Yeah.
And I just thought it was interesting because it's not really what you would think. The ones, the cars that are the sort of the most popular with car thieves are trucks, which is sort of interesting because you would think like, well, Escalades used to be the one that used to be the big number one car that people like to steal. And now the Ford F-250 crew is the number one car that car thieves want. And then the Chevy Silverado, the Chevy Avalanche, the GMC Sierra, the Ford F-350 crew. Then at number six, the Escalade now, which they account to the fact that it's not as cool as it used to be either. Things just come and go. People just don't stick. They're not loyal like they used to be, you know?
You miss those days of loyal thieves.
I know. It's just sad. If you want to have a car that will not be stolen, the lowest claim rates for theft, you could get yourself maybe a Honda CR-V. That's on the list of the lowest stolen cars. Or a Tiguan, a Volkswagen Tiguan. Nobody wants those, apparently. They're not popular for the thieves. Jeep Compass, a Hyundai Tucson. They're not really exciting cars. You can see that my tone of voice just like I almost fell asleep reading the list because I was like, I don't want one of any of those.
I like Volkswagens.
I like Volkswagen. I own a Volkswagen, but not a Tiguan. But I did like the Tiguan, actually. So maybe I'll get one of those and I don't have to worry about anybody stealing it. I'm sort of also one of those people that sort of thinks if it's your time, like, you know, if someone's going to steal your car or break into it or whatever, like, right. No matter how good you are about protection and locking your doors and this and that, it's going to happen and just right. Give it up.
Well, we've seen
you'd be amazed the number of people who still just leave, you know, computers and radios sitting on their car seat.
Yeah.
When we have car break-ins, it's universally the issue. Somebody just left something, you know, as a teaser for somebody. And so, you know, you got
to
think.
Raymond, we need to get you some of our clean car campaign signs. Do you have any?
We do not.
Okay, so we actually started this program with APD. Lucky Marietta District has also been a part of it and developed some signs as well. It works like a charm because most of these folks are, you know, especially with the attractions, you know, the bulk of them are coming from somewhere else. They're not used to parking their car in the city every single day.
Right.
And they just need a reminder and you know, there's kind of this sort of argument, well, you know, we don't want to make people scared of thieves. Like, you know, and APD says, look, you know, if they see that sign and then they're aware of it, they remove their valuables, put them in the trunk out of view or whatever. And then they go into the zoo and they have a great time and they have a great day. And then they tell everybody about it and they come back to their car and it's fine. Then that's that. But if they come back to their car and it's been broken into, it doesn't matter how great of a day they had at Zoo Atlanta. That's what they're going to remember.
Absolutely.
Correct. Absolutely.
And so
you're not going to scare them with that sign.
Right.
I mean, look at what people see every day when they just watch the news.
You know, it's funny because I have like a weird mental conversation with myself every time I have valuables that I don't want to take with me.
Right.
What I tend to do, I shouldn't tell all the thieves that are now tuned into the show about this, but like I sit there and because I've seen those signs actually too. It's a good reminder for people, I think it's a better reminder than it is a scare thing.
And we really do feel like the numbers, like they have helped drive our numbers of larcenies from auto down. I think they really work.
You know, it's one of those things where you have to kind of think of it almost as just one of those new common sense things. You just need to always, everybody, no matter where you're parking, no matter where you are, whether you're in the suburbs or in the city, it doesn't really matter. You shouldn't leave valuables visible in your car, even if it's just the nice jacket. Like, put it in the trunk, or, you know, what I do, as I should say, I tuck my valuables. Sometimes I leave them in the car, but I push them down, like, kind of under the seat-ish, and then I throw some of my reusable grocery bags on top of it so it just looks like a pile of junk. And I'm lessening the fact someone peeks in my car, they're not going to see it. And
because it doesn't matter where you are. I mean, sometimes people think, oh, you know, it's only when you're in a bad neighborhood. The nicest neighborhoods in Atlanta are having the same issue.
That's almost, if you were a thief and you wanted some advice and you were tuning into Good Morning Atlanta on businessradiox.com, I would suggest that you go to the better neighborhoods because you're going to get better stuff. But I would never actually suggest that, so you didn't really hear this. But, you know, like, of course, like, who has that iPads and the people in the better neighborhoods, so they're in as much risk as anywhere.
Sure. It's the back to the density thing. You know, it's a double-edged sword because density does mean more people, more cars, more, you know,
more opportunity.
So yes, I mean, we do see, you know, at least more people trying, but those numbers really are going down. Especially in downtown, we see those numbers every year going down a few percentage points.
Yep.
The Clean Car Campaign has had something to do with that. The cameras You know, we are blanketed with cameras in downtown.
And those are controversial all through the country. And I just, I have a hard time with that issue. I mean, get over it. If you're not doing anything wrong that your mother wouldn't be embarrassed by or the law wouldn't be opposed to, you got no reason to worry if you've been watched
on
camera.
Yeah, there's not, in most cases, there's not somebody sitting there watching the camera. I mean, the camera is really there. If an incident happens or if there is someone that they are looking for, then they can go to the cameras in that area and find
Absolutely.
That person. So
But. Right. I'm just saying we could do a whole show on this.
Absolutely.
I mean, because we could have call-ins and we could do a whole show on this because people are concerned about privacy and 1984 Big Brother, George Orwell.
Yeah, I know.
Right. And so, I'm with you because I kind of don't care. I mean, like, that's my whole attitude about, like, oh, well, if someone's going to break into my car, they're going to break into my car. Like, I drive a convertible. It's really easy to cut through the top and get what they want. So, but at the same time, and I'm not doing anything too crazy, so I don't really care if I get caught on camera, but I kind of see both sides of that.
Yeah, I do too. Absolutely. I mean, we'll never all agree on that one, for sure.
Yeah, I think what is – you know, hard to argue with it are the statistics, and we have seen a decrease since we've really, you know, and we've seen that it really have helped drive our crime numbers down. And then, you know, the police will tell us that in many instances, they've been able to apprehend somebody that might have been more difficult to apprehend where they're, you know, if you're just relying on the human eye on the street to be able to find somebody. But if you have an eye in the sky and you can go from camera to camera to camera in a few seconds, you can find
the Boston Marathon. That's how we caught that guy in such a short period of time.
Right. And so everybody was all about it in that scenario.
Prevented another bombing.
You know, I think the one I don't like, and I actually think because of that, I'm sort of okay with it because all the stores had cameras and the streets had some cameras and they were able to really do something super important for us as a country to catch these guys. Right. The one I don't like is when they're going to give you a ticket. You know, they're going to catch you at the red light and automatically send you a ticket. Because we as Americans, we like sport. You know, I want to feel like I legitimately, it was me versus the cops and they caught me. You know, if the camera's going to catch me, that's just not any fun. You know? So I don't mind the cameras for after the fact. Like, you know, so let's say there was an accident in the intersection and they use that camera to say, well, what really happened in the accident? Who was at fault? Not a problem. But don't send me a ticket. That just feels like cheating on your part. Anyway. All right. I got both of them to shut up on that one. I have the room all to myself now. All right, well, let's move on and talk about the zoo specifically. What is going on over there? You already told me you're a business guy.
Yeah.
So, you know what, before we get to actually what's going on over there, how did you end up in charge of this place?
You don't think it's a logical step from, you know,
monkeys,
the bank to the zoo?
To the pandas, not so much.
Yeah, it was a big step. The bridge that led to that was after spending 15 years in the corporate banking world, I made the big change on my part to lead community affairs for the bank. And so that put me deeply involved in the nonprofit world, the philanthropic world, which, you know, helped me develop the skills and the relationships that the zoo needed badly. So that was the bridge. And so when you think about that role, it's not as big a jump. I just essentially jumped from one side of the desk to the other.
Okay.
I went from giving away money for a living to begging for money for a living. So, yeah, I knew the situation well. I just jumped from one side to the other.
I love it. So now how long have you been there?
3 years. It's hard to believe. I still feel like I'm new.
So do you love it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, two of the best things about the job are, one, being able to walk through the zoo and just seeing, you know, faces lit up, particularly the young ones, as they're developing and early education is so important, to see them lit up and to see the families having such a great time.
Yeah.
The second is to be able to walk around town, and we talked about this earlier, and, you know, everybody understands what I do. And has a connection to it and can tell the story about how they grew up going to the zoo or they helped raise their child at the zoo or, you know, did a sleepover at the zoo. So that makes it, you know, I have an immediate bond with virtually anybody in this town.
Yeah, our business Radio X receptionist out in the front was, like, almost jumping for joy when Raymond came in. She was like, the guy that runs the zoo is here. She's so excited. So
that's,
I was
awesome.
Like, you're like a big rock star. Like a celebrity. It's very cool.
At least with my daughter, I am. I've got a,
you know what,
a
that's,
daughter that's 11, so that made it extra special when I took this job.
That's all that matters, that your kids think you're cool.
Right, exactly.
It's all about that. So So 3 years there, a lot of begging for money. Let's talk about the financial side of things. You know, people pay a ticket price to come in, but that's obviously not enough to cover everything the zoo needs to do. So what do you rely on for funds?
Today, I will say we do rely most heavily on ticket revenue because we don't have the benefit of a large endowment, because we get no, you know, operating funding from the public sector. It comes down to ticket revenue and things related to it. So, you know, once people buy a ticket, they come in and they buy gifts and they buy food. Hopefully they'd buy a membership ultimately. And then we do some fundraising on top of that. But today, the majority of the funding is dependent on the gate, which is then leads to our biggest business risk is the weather.
Yes.
Because, yeah, if the weather's bad, people don't come to the zoo necessarily, and we will take it on the chin big time.
Yeah, and it's been, wow, really rainy this year.
Yeah.
Something the rest of us are just complaining about, like a bad hair day, and you're going like, oh, no.
Well, the good news is it really has not hurt us. I say it hadn't hurt us. You know, maybe we could be even better off today if it weren't raining. But we, you know, we're ahead of our budget for the year despite the rain. And I think that's because, you know, when you get a weather period where, you know, it's just, you know, you look at the forecast and it's 10 days of rain. Well, you know, you're not going to sit in your house for 10 days. You're going to go nuts. So,
right.
So people realize, okay, I'm going to have to work through this. And thanks to technology now, you know, you look at the forecast for the day and it says rain. Well, then you go on your phone and look at the hourly forecast and see it's 0% chance of rain till 3 o'clock, at which point it becomes 50.
Right.
Well, I can go to the zoo. Come on, people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it really has not hurt us particularly bad. I think the ability to access, you know, technology and get your own sophisticated weather forecast. And then just the mindset of, you know, I can't just accept that it's going to rain for 10 days. I got to, you know, get out there and live my life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it also makes me think about marketing right away, because if the main thing that's driving, you know, you guys being able to stay around is having people come through that gate, you've got to be constantly reaching out to people saying, hey, come through the gate.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's an awareness issue. But at the same time, we're also trying to build up the, you know, the support of the zoo. Sometimes people think they're supporting the zoo by just being a member.
Yeah.
And we appreciate those memberships, and they help. But, you know, most of our members we lose money on because they come so often.
Okay.
And, you know, the operating cost of the zoo. So, you know, ultimately we need people to philanthropically support the zoo. And that's not a natural thought process, because I think a lot of people think of a zoo as a, you know, a Disney-like attraction.
Yeah.
And we're much more than an attraction. I mean, our mission at the heart is conservation. I mean, that's why we exist. The attraction helps feed that conservation. But we're an education organization, we're a research organization, and a conservation organization. I mean, we've got 8 PhDs on staff that do, you know, research on animal welfare, animal health, animal conservation. We have people out in the field doing real conservation work. But people don't always realize that.
No.
You know, we got 130,000 school kids that come through the zoo as a part of their scientific education. So we've got to work on helping educate people as to why we're important to the community so that they support us beyond just being a member.
Well, it's interesting because having a zoo and having a good zoo is sort of an attractor for a city. You know, yeah. It's like when you, I mean, I right off the top of my head, think about other cities like you hear all the time about, or at least you used to, about the San Diego Zoo and the National Zoo, certainly. So like having these places and having them be, you know, well-maintained and interesting and having, you know, new animals coming in or, you know, special things happening. A city takes pride in that.
Yeah. I mean, I consider ourselves a front door to the city.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, when most people, particularly with kids, travel, that is one of the first things they think of is,
right.
All right, is there a local zoo? And so, yeah, it is, you know, hugely important that we be, you know, a very attractive, well-run, well-maintained organization. Atlanta learned that lesson back in the mid-'80s. We were named one of the worst zoos in America.
That's very sad.
We had animals dying.
Aww.
And we were the Grady Hospital of the day, meaning everybody realized, came together and realized we can't be a world-class city if we don't have a world-class zoo.
Right.
And so the top corporate leaders in the city at that time came together with, you know, then Mayor Andy Young, made the decision to privatize the zoo, led a capital campaign. It was just like Grady Hospital.
Yeah.
And that's great, but we all have to remember, with both Grady Hospital and both the zoo, you can't take your eyes off the ball,
sure,
or you'll be back where you were.
Sure.
We're bad at waiting for, you know, a disaster to happen before we do something.
Right. Well, you talk
and then move on to the next thing. And you got to keep your eyes on all the balls and, you know, keep juggling them all.
Right. And you talked about, before we got on the air, about some new construction, some new development going on at the zoo, which is the first development that's happened in quite some time. So talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely. I mean, this is a huge year for the zoo for multiple reasons. But on the facility side, you know, when you walk around the zoo, the good news is most guests think it's a very nice zoo, that the exhibits are good. The problem is the back of the house that people don't see, where the animals are taken care of, where they sleep in the evenings, et cetera. Those buildings were rehabbed in the mid-'80s, and so they are all in horrible shape. There's a ton of deferred maintenance out there. And so we have to address that. And the first piece of that was we broke ground about 3 weeks ago on a new amphibian and reptile project. It's a two-year construction project, and that will replace the existing World of Reptiles, which is the oldest building on property that the public inhabits. It's over 50 years old.
Yeah.
There's, you know, when we went out fundraising for this project, all the, you know, the funders said, you know, don't even make us go to the reptile house. We know how bad it is. You don't have to sell us on the fact you need a new one.
Right.
So that's big. And then, you know, we got a long list of projects after that to make sure we stay state of the art and healthy and thriving.
Yeah. And on the animal side, how do you stay competitive in that arena?
Well, we have a hidden weapon called the cycle of life. And so, you know, we have a very active generation of animal babies.
Which everyone loves the babies.
Everybody loves a baby. Doesn't matter whether it's human or animal.
That's
and
true.
So, you know, just think this week we had, you know, two panda cubs born. I mean, panda cubs are huge, even internationally. So we were, you know, the lead story on Today's Show and Good Morning America. We've been on every news outlet there is.
Right.
And, you know, that helps draw attendance, particularly when they go out on exhibit. And so we had panda cubs, but then it goes beyond that. We've got a new, you know, gorilla and a new orangutan due this fall. And then on top of that, we've got for the first time ever in Zoo Atlanta history, a rhino baby on the way.
So
that will be a big attraction. So that helps drive our attendance, is that continuous generation of new animals. So
right,
unlike
a
museum that has to build
me
a new exhibit.
You shamed me a little bit before I went on the air because I didn't know how big the baby panda was. So now I'm just going to
shame. Does anybody on this show not know how big a panda cub is?
Okay, fine. I'm duly shamed. But so now I have to ask, how big is a baby rhino?
You know, it's bigger than a panda cub.
I would assume so.
I have never seen one because we've never had one here. But they, you know, it's, you know, I won't try to answer that. I'll get that wrong probably,
okay,
having not seen one. But for anybody else that, you know, has lived under a rock like she has,
yeah.
A panda cub is about the size of a stick of butter. I mean, it's really, really small. One was 3.5 ounces when the twins were born. And that's the first time twins have been born since 1987 in the United States.
Well, and you mentioned that obviously it's just a big attraction and people sort of focus on the zoo just knowing they've been born, but you can't actually see them yet.
No.
So how old do they have to be before they can sort of be out for the public to see?
You know, with twins, it's going to be a little different, and we have to monitor how things progress with the care by mom. But they should be, you know, sometime in the fall, they will be out on exhibit, and that'll just depend on, you know, how well they're doing with mom and progressing. So, yeah, there's that anticipation they're coming, which is nice.
Yeah.
So we get all the media now, and then we'll get the media again when it comes time to put them out.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, we just, you know, opened Splash Fountain about 3 weeks ago. July 2nd, we opened it, which is an interactive water fountain. Think, you know, 18 jets shooting water up in the air. And kids have loved it, as have moms. Moms have been in there with them.
Yeah, because, I'd get right in there.
Because, you know, on a hot day, you know, it's very refreshing.
Yeah.
So it's at the tail end of the zoo where all the other rides are. And there's a shaded area for the parents to sit while the kids are running through the water.
Yeah.
So, it's been a big year at the zoo, both animal-wise and facility-wise.
You mentioned that, like, some of the members kind of are repeat, you know, they come again and again. Do you find that a lot of people sort of come once and then not again for a couple of years? Or, like, what's sort of the normal visiting to the zoo for a family?
For a family that has young kids, it becomes, you know, once they get to age two or three, they come, they buy a membership, and they stay there till about age 12. And they come regularly. I mean, we have members, particularly ones that live inside the city, that come at least once a week in good months.
Wow.
I mean, my wife and daughter did that, and I had no affiliation with the zoo. I mean, it's, think about it, it's sort of like going to the park.
Because
we got botanicals all through the place, and yeah, and then you get all these animals, and you get a train, and you get a water fountain, and you get a carousel. So yeah, and you, I mean, there's no charge for parking. So you know, for a little over $100, a family can buy a membership and, you know, use it virtually every day of the year.
Yeah,
at no extra cost.
Raymond, talk a little bit about some of these programs, because you guys have had, I've noticed that recently a lot of like Brew at the Zoo and you know, these sort of kind of things for maybe, you know, young adults or adults, just and which I think is somewhat new. So
that's a great question. I'm glad you brought it up, because, you know, unfortunately we're branded again like a zoo, and too many people think you have to have young kids to go to the zoo.
Right.
And the reality is, you know, the three of us could go to the zoo today with no kids and have a phenomenal time.
Sure.
And
right.
Learn a lot.
Yeah.
So yes, we are doing more so that anybody in Atlanta has a reason to come to the zoo. So, yeah, Brew at the Zoo, Jazz Zoo, a lot of events for younger adults.
How about for older adults?
Yeah, you know, older adults can come anytime. Yeah, I mean, Beastly Feast is a, you know, a fabulous party for you know, people of all age. But, yeah, we got Wild on the Rocks, which is an event every Thursday in the warm months, which is sort of like a cocktail hour with a live animal encounter incorporated into it. Really fun. So that's a good kind of
date. So when you say live animal encounter, what are we talking here?
You know, it can be anything from watching a tiger going through its training session and being fed. To it could be, you know, a parakeet, you know, on somebody's arm. It could be a lot of different things.
Sure.
And each one has a different theme. So
yeah.
One might be themed about lemurs.
Right.
One might be themed about, you know, snakes. So they vary by each time.
Cool.
Dan's envisioning like being himself personally eaten like, by
can
a
I
tiger.
Ride a giraffe?
Yeah.
We do have some limits, but, you know, and then we got sleepover programs, which are hugely popular, particularly for families, where you come spend the night, you get to the zoo about 6 o'clock, and you leave about 10 o'clock the next morning, and you, you know, go behind the scenes, and you do tours at night with a flashlight. It's a lot of fun. So I encourage people to look at our website and follow us on social media, because there are things for people of all ages throughout the year.
Well, that's kind of a good point. I'm glad you mentioned that. Why don't you give the website and kind of direct people to where they need to go to,
yeah.
so they can stay in touch with you.
It's www.zooatlanta.org. And for people that are big panda fans, we've set up something called Cub Confidential, where those people get exclusive looks at, you know, panda images, panda information that is not released to the broader public. So, you know, you can subscribe to that on our Panda Cam. So if you go to our website, you'll see our Panda Cam by Earth Cam, and you will see where you can sign up for this, you know, email distribution for Cub Confidential, and you'll be the insider look on our panda cubs.
That's so cute. Now, you mentioned also, I think maybe before we got on the air, that there's only 4 zoos in the country that have pandas.
Correct.
So how do you get to be one of these special zoos that has this?
You'd be a fabulous city like the city of Atlanta. So, you know, it was a pretty intensive competition to be able to be in that role. You have to be a world-class zoo, which we are. We're clearly, you know, highly accredited. We probably, like so many things in Atlanta, probably got a better reputation outside of Atlanta than inside of Atlanta.
Interesting.
You know, Atlantans, you know, take for granted some of the assets we have in this town.
Yeah.
So within the zoo community, we're very highly respected. I mean, in addition to the pandas, we've got the largest collection of gorillas and the largest collections of orangs of any zoo in the country.
Wow.
We, you know, because of that, we, you know, are a leader on research in those areas. For example, we are leading an international project called the Great Ape Heart Project. That's a coalition of, you know, animal professionals throughout the world that are doing research on cardiac health of gorillas, because it's the large leading cause of death amongst gorillas.
Aww.
And that's one of those things, if it wasn't a zoo doing it, no one would do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like your local vet does it. So it's really important both for, you know, care of animals within the zoo community and in the wild to understand, you know, some of their health issues.
So interesting. And you guys have, don't you guys have some facilities also, like for events and stuff there? Or did
absolutely.
I just make that up?
No, no. It's, yeah, I mean, that's another key piece of our revenue is hosting events.
Yeah.
So we've got, you know, facilities for everything from corporate training and sales training, where, you know, people can, you know, sit in an office part of the day, but then get out and be in the zoo. Great for team building. You know, we do scavenger hunts and other things to help with team building. So we've got, you know, a tent that holds probably 1,000 people for, you know, a party. So, yeah it's a great venue for events.
Did I make this up? But I think I was at, a, like, TEDx Peachtree there,
yeah,
right?
You were. Exactly right.
And it was a great space, I have to say. And I did actually walk through the zoo on my way back to the parking lot. And I was like, this is pretty cool. I just came from a business thing, and now I'm walking through the zoo.
Yeah. I mean, we host weddings. We host sororities. I mean, you name it. We've got it. Because, I mean, we can do food from everything from your hot dog inside the park to, you know, a gourmet, you know, seafood dinner, you know, on the gorilla deck looking out over the gorillas.
Have you ever had, like, a proposal at the zoo?
Absolutely.
What's, like, the best kind of proposal at the zoo? Can you think of anything?
No,
the only reason I'm asking this is because I was walking. I'll give you a minute to think while I'm telling the story. I was walking in the mall the other day, and I think I'm not sure this is exactly what was happening because we caught the tail end of it. But I think a guy was proposing to his girlfriend in the Apple store. So I'm not sure exactly what he set up, but clearly all the Apple staff was in on it. And like maybe she was looking at a new computer or something and something came up on the screen. I'm not really sure. But when we got there, everybody was just clapping and the girl was like crying and it was like very dramatic. So I don't know what he did. It was kind of.
Well, I don't know if it was as dramatic as the one I heard this morning, and this is not zoo-related. I'm not going to make up something from the zoo. But I watched on the news this morning where a gentleman had his girlfriend arrested.
Oh, God.
Had her car stopped, and the police officer arrested her, detained her, put her in the car.
Oh, Lord.
She is in tears at this point, at which point the boyfriend comes along, gets down on his knee, and proposes to her.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I'm thinking that's not a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. I think you've crossed the line.
Yes. I mean, embarrassing your girlfriend slash soon-to-be fiancé at the Apple store or, you know, at the zoo or at a restaurant, all good.
Well, but first of all, zoo, way cooler than Apple store. Come on. I mean,
thank you.
I agree.
Whatever's in the Apple store right now is not going to be there in 5 years.
Right, you can't go back.
You can't go back and, like, relive it.
I'm with you. Hey, you know, the Ferris wheel would be a cool place for a proposal.
Oh, there's going to be so many proposals.
Absolutely.
The Ferris wheel, yeah. It's going to be a spot. So,
yeah. So then if it goes away,
and a date spot, you know, I'd take a date there. It's going to be cool. Like, it's going to be a nice little, like, hey, by the way, I live 4 blocks away from the Ferris wheel. How about that?
Come on, let's go to the let's go get some private time in the VIP car.
I didn't say that, Dana.
Just saying. So, all right, back to the zoo. Stop distracting me, Dan. Or I'm gonna have someone steal your non-existent car. Do you have a car these days?
I got a car. I drove here today.
Okay, sorry.
Atlantic Station.
You have to. That's not.
Yeah, you got a bus. Got a bus that comes here.
Yeah, it's not as easy though. Admittedly.
No, I didn't. I didn't wake up quite early enough to do that. No. Though I would have. Okay. I would have tried.
All right. Before we leave the zoo entirely, anything else we need to know? One of the things that you started talking about, just mentioning some of the programs with the, you know, the cocktail hours and the, you know, stuff for sort of adults that don't have little kids to come to the zoo. It's one of my pet topics, as you know. I just love when organizations realize they have to sort of do something to engage that group in the middle, the gap, that's what I like to call them, because it's like, you know, if you have little kids, you do little kid activities. And if you're a senior and you have lots of free time and you're looking for stuff to do, you do lots of activities. And also the older set is sort of not so keyed into their video games and their phones and their TVs, and they're looking for more things to do out and about. So they get out, but it's that middle group of us that I'm going to still claim that I'm a part of,
right.
You know, 30s, 40s, 50s, who are just busy with our lives that don't get out.
Right.
And 20s too, really. Once you kind of get out of college and you're in the working world and you're just busy, you go to a bar, or you go to a movie, and you don't think to go to brew at the zoo.
Right.
So let's emphasize again that there's lots of stuff going on around town for all ages, and not to just sort of get so, you know, stuck in your mind.
Yeah, nothing aggravates me more is when I hear people to say, you know, there's nothing to do in this town.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. Not Atlanta. Yeah.
We are overwhelmed with things to do.
I don't hear many people saying that, but, you know, I don't know.
Maybe, well, you're
maybe
in
it's
the
my
city.
Set. Yeah. But
well, I think downtown people don't say that. because they see it and they're a part of it.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think a lot of, you know, the suburban and exurban world who's not close to it and doesn't hear about it on a day-to-day basis, you know, the zoo's guilty of this as well because, you know, we don't have a big advertising budget. So you could live in suburban or exurban Atlanta, and if you don't read the paper, like a lot of people don't, you almost could, you know, live a couple years and not even know there's a zoo in Atlanta if you don't take the time to really reach out and say, what's there to do in this town?
Well, then also, like you said, you kind of have in your mind, the zoo is for kids. Oh, that's cute. They have pandas. Whatever. When my niece and nephew come in town, I'll take them. But, like, you don't necessarily think, I need something to do on a Friday night. Let's see what the zoo has going on.
Right.
You know, and that's the other thing I like to always sort of just when especially when you're here, Dan, and we're talking about in-town stuff, I just like to sort of put the call out to the burbs, you know, because it's not that far. And there is still, I mean, as cities go, as big metropolitan cities go, you can still get in pretty easily. The parking is still lots of parking available around this town for pretty cheap.
Right.
And MARTA. And, you know, soon the streetcar and whatever. And there's just more and more and more to do every time we talk.
Yeah. You know, a lot of people say, oh, the zoo's just too far out. Come on. Mm. They think that because you have to get on I-20 to get there.
Yeah.
Well, you're on I-20 about 120 feet.
Yeah.
And then you get off.
Yeah.
And you take two turns and you're there.
Yeah.
We're, you know, 3/4 of a mile from the Capitol in Turner Field.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're part of downtown, but that's kind of just a mentality that's still there.
Yeah.
And you're right. Particularly on a Saturday. I mean, you don't have traffic coming downtown the connector on a Saturday usually. And so, yeah, you can be there in 20, 25 minutes and park for free.
Yeah.
So, and,
I think the out-of-town, not out-of-towners, but the, you know, outside the perimeter people just need to be a little bit, I was outside the perimeter, so I'm not calling anybody out. I was outside the perimeter for most of my daughter's, all of my daughter's sort of younger years until she graduated from high school. I didn't move into the city until she was out of school. And so I was one of those people that sort of said, oh, you know. And I think what also happens for people who've been here for a number of years, there wasn't as much to do.
Right.
And the city was a little bit scarier. And
the zoo wasn't very attractive. I mean, I have a lot of people that come up to me when I'm in the zoo and say, wow, you know, I hadn't been to the zoo in 20 years.
Yeah, we didn't
know. They're thinking back to the old zoo that was broken.
Right.
And they go, wow, this place is amazing. I should have come back down here sooner. So, yeah.
Right, and we had last week on the show, we had Cyclorama here.
Did you really?
And same kind of thing. It's like, I admit it, I went to Cyclorama when I first moved here, like sometime in that first year or two that I moved here, and I haven't been back since. And they also have a lot of really interesting programs happening, a lot of really cool stuff. And it's just, I think it's about tapping in and just sort of getting connected with these places and knowing that they're there for you and not forgetting that it's not just about going to see the latest shoot 'em up movie.
Good way to start. Like Zoo Atlanta's Facebook page and like Atlanta downtown, you know, downtown Atlanta. We have our, you know, we continue to build our social media presence and promote assets like the zoo, you know, every week. And, you know, we just continue to see more and more people. So, and it's a great way for people to connect just through social media. You don't have to pick up the paper. You know, it'll
doesn't
be
cost
in your
you anything.
Doesn't cost you anything. It'll be in your newsfeed. And, you know, I mean, this Skyview thing, I mean, gosh, we've gotten, I mean, every time we posted a picture of this Ferris wheel, you know, it's like 500 likes, you know, people just go nuts when they see, you know, so it's, yeah, that's an easy way to, you know, just to plug in. If you're in the suburbs, just like AtlantaDowntown.com, like the zoo's page, like the other assets, just to keep up what's going on. And they run specials, you know, about that, you know, it's, yeah, I'm a fan of social media in that sense.
I agree. It's great on both sides. It's great for people like us who need to get our word out, and it's great for consumers who want to know what's going on.
Yeah. Well, the nice thing about social media, I think, you know, some of it's a little overwhelming to me still.
Yes.
It's a function of my age, I think, and just my sort of desire to go crawl in a hole and not have anyone ever talk to me again. But, you know, with email, newsletters and stuff can get really annoying. Mm-hmm. And the nice thing about Facebook and Twitter and things like that is you can go and look when you want to go and look.
Exactly.
You know, you don't have to be bothered all the time. But when you're like, hey, you know, it's the weekend's coming up. I want to see what I want to do. You can just hop on Facebook and kind of, if you're subscribed already to some of these pages, you can either just look through your own newsfeed or click over to their page. And it's much more when you want it. When it's being forced down your throat.
Yep.
So that's always a good thing. So again, the Zoo Atlanta website is
www.zooatlanta.org.
And what do we need any updates on downtown?
Downtown Restaurant Week. Speaking of pages that you should like, definitely check out our Downtown Restaurant Week page so you can keep up with all the restaurants. It's coming up July 27th through August 4th. So we've changed it a little bit this year.
Okay.
So we have The last few years, it's been $25, $35 2-3-course meals at the restaurants that are participating. This year, it's going to be $15, $25, and $35.
Sweet.
So, yeah, with some of the restaurants that didn't really make sense for Restaurant Week now can get in on it, and folks that don't want to spend $25 but you know, $15 makes sense for a nice 2-3-course meal. Can get involved. So lots of restaurants. I can't name them all off the top of my head, but there's a lot of great restaurants, great sponsors. Even a cruise line. You've got Celebrity Cruise Lines that's sponsoring, and they're going to be doing a lot of cool stuff. If you happen to be in the right restaurant at the right time, you might have a ship captain come and bless you with a free dinner on Celebrity Cruise Lines.
Sweet.
So yeah, it's going to be a lot of cool stuff like that this year. It's a record number of restaurants participating. So we're excited about that. The other thing is CAP has now started a downtown partners program that is really kind of designed to bring in the small business, nonprofit, even individual into the fold of CAP. Traditionally it was the Raymond Kings and his SunTrust days, and the big business, the Coca-Colas that were kind of these were the only people we had at the table, you know, back in the day. But now, I mean, downtown is so diverse. With the nonprofit community really kind of coming on strong in downtown, with more people living downtown, we wanted to give people an opportunity to get involved in CAP at a level they can afford.
Yeah.
So we have a $250 and a $500 level of this Downtown Partners Program. It comes with a lot of the same benefits that our members get, not all of them, but it's a way to get involved and to support and to be a kind of an active stakeholder in the community. So that it's not just SunTrust and it's not just Coca-Cola and Georgia Pacific, leading the charts, that you actually kind of have a part in it too as a small business. So.
Very cool.
Well, and let me say that, I've been involved with CAP, 15, 20 years probably, and sure. I can't say enough about what they've done. I mean, when you look at downtown and how it's changed, CAP was the one that led it, and it's made it much more, resident-friendly, business-friendly.
Absolutely.
Both as an investor while I was at SunTrust and as, an investor at, at Zoo Atlanta, we clearly feel like we get our money's worth for what we put in it by what they do for downtown. And, We all benefit when downtown does well, even if you don't live downtown or use downtown.
Right.
If you're going to be a world-class city, you need a healthy downtown. There's no way around it.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we, not to go off completely on a tangent, but we often do in the, sort of the news stories portion of the show, we often talk about the number of jobs coming into the city, again, whether it be in downtown or out in the burbs or wherever, but none of that happens unless the city is attractive to people. If the crime rates are bad, if it's dirty, if it's, right. If there's nothing to do, all those things, if there's nobody living in downtown, people just come and they say, no.
Right.
But, now we always had a great location because of our airport.
Right.
And but when I first moved here, that's sort of like what we had. We had weather and the airport, and that was it. And now here we are 20-something odd years later, and we have a really vibrant, bustling downtown,
sure.
Which, that is clean, despite some lists that say opposite.
Well, no, those lists said Atlanta, not downtown. The one you're referring to, where we got one of the dirtiest cities list. Yeah, it was Atlanta. So I don't know where they're referring to in Atlanta, which is a big place. And I don't even know if it's accurate to begin with.
Well, also,
I can say downtown is not, relative to other cities, quote unquote, dirty. I mean, we have guys working, and men and women working, every single day to keep the streets clean of downtown. Plus the city. So
yeah, and it's funny. I was doing a project, and we're going to wrap up here because I could just keep talking. Yeah. But I was doing a project downtown at the 191 building, and I hired a couple of interns to come help me, and. One of the interns was a good friend of mine's daughter who just graduated from high school. So she's 18. She's perfectly capable of driving herself around. But, moms are overprotective and whatever. And so my girlfriend said to me, I don't know about her driving into downtown by herself. And when she parks and she has to walk out. And I was like, no, it's super safe. I promise you.
Right.
Don't even think about it. And really, it's true. I wasn't saying that just to, swindle her into letting me use her kid. It really is true. I don't feel any discomfort as a woman walking around downtown Real, I mean, I probably wouldn't want to walk around downtown at 2 in the morning, but not because it's not right. safe. That's just a dumb thing to do in general.
Anywhere in the city, you know, anywhere or in the world. Anywhere, 2 in the morning is, you know, 2 in the morning. So
I remember walking, I went to London and I was by myself and I was walking back from a theater, from the theater district to my hotel. And while in the theater district, I felt completely safe. It was bustling. But then I walked through a park that was sort of empty and I thought, okay, this was really dumb. I should have gotten a cab, you know, so that happens everywhere. Yeah. Anyway, Atlanta, we're rah-rah Atlanta. That's what this show's been about today. So, like, go zoo, go downtown, and go Good Morning Atlanta. Don't forget to tune into our new clip show Sundays at noon on 1190 AM. Very excited about that. And as always, we want to thank our sponsors, World Trade Center Atlanta. You can learn more about them by visiting WTCAtlanta.com. And, of course, Central Atlanta Progress, which you can find out about at AtlantaDowntown.com. Thanks so much to Raymond King from the Zoo for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thanks to, you know, all of Atlanta for supporting us and coming out and, you know, taking advantage of what we have to offer.
Absolutely. And, of course, to Dan Williams from Central Atlanta Progress. Thank you so much for being here.
Fun as always.
And we will see you next time. Stay tuned for more great programming right here on BusinessRadioX.com.